Tune in to Radio Stormer on the dailystormer.com.
TWO Radio at Radio Stormer on the dailystormer.com.
And welcome to Truthful Out Radio. Today's date is the 13th of November 2015. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. You can find all our podcasts in the sidebar of thedailystormer.com, and you can also find the link to our chat room there. As always, today I'm joined by the producer of Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told, Mr. Dennis Wise. And how are you doing today on this blistering, blowing a holy day, Dennis? It's a hurricane here in Wales at the moment. That's what it feels like.
Well, I'm fresh as a bean today. I've had a good sleep and, a quick shower just before I came on, so raring to go. It's miserable, but not raining here.
Are you all coffeed up?
Certainly am, yeah.
Yeah, same here. Got to start the day with a few black coffees. Got to.
Yeah.
Well, here you've almost come to finishing part 12 of Communism by the Back Door, you were telling me just before we went on air. Do you want to give a recap of that and where you've got to and what you've been looking at this week to do with it?
Well, you know, it's probably puzzled a lot of regular listeners. Like, every week I'm saying, like, I think I've finished it, and I thought I had finished it again last week. But at the last minute, I just got an email with a video in it, which was sent to me, and I just had to include it. So that meant taking some parts of the previous one out, because I've only got the 15 minutes, and I had to fit this one in. So that then took another week at least. I finished it the other day. It's got one or two things to check on it, make sure it's right, and hopefully it'll be up. Possibly early next week, Monday.
Yeah, there's a lot of work that goes into it. But people don't realise just how much time it takes, and then you get something new, and you've got to add that to it, and then you realise that more information comes in, and new information comes in, so you've got to change stuff, get all the music in time with it all, and the spelling, I suppose, and get all that right. And this one's dealing with white genocide, isn't it? And the history of it all.
Well, yeah, it is white genocide, but that's not just about race mixing. That covers quite a few things, and one of course is homosexuality, and a couple of other things as well. So I've tried to put it all together, because basically the common denominator of it all is that we're going back to Babylon, because all this took place in Babylon all those years ago, and the people in power have got this certain thing about it where they want to revitalize that system. So, yeah, it covers a lot of ground. It covers the actual genocide itself. It shows the European situation. It shows how the Jews actually manipulated the blacks in America from the early part of the century. And it also shows, I came across some footage, quite sickening footage, to be quite honest, about how a couple in England apparently are bringing up the child as a transgender, where he wears a skirt and he wears trousers, and it must be some horrible existence waiting for this young child when he's old enough to realise what's going on.
Yeah, it's just one of the really sickening things that is going on today is that this isn't just for deviant teenagers and people that are older, but they're actually pushing this onto young children. And you've got these feminist lesbian mothers that deliberately twist the child's head and encourage them to behave like the other gender. And instead of just saying, this is just a tomboy, or it's just a phase they're going through, and try to steer them back in the right direction, they actually push them in that direction. I think that it's fantastic that they've got a child who's confused about their gender. They think this is a positive thing. And the child is rewarded for saying that. And they just seem to be trying to encourage this as much as they possibly can. And when you think about it, Now, homosexuals are between 1 to 2% of the population, and transgenders have got to be just between 1 to 2% of the homosexual population, I would have thought, or even less than that. You know, you're talking about an absolutely tiny, tiny, tiny fraction of people, and yet everything in the media is geared around to promoting them. Even the mainstream soap operas have now got a transsexual in them. You know, I believe you said to me before there was one in... I think you said there was one before in Coronation Street. There's now one in EastEnders. So what are the chances of that in real life, of there being, you know, these transgenders?
Well, like X Factor last week, the transgender went out. And I think it was more a luck than judgment, to be honest, because at one point it looked like the voting was going to go for him off the judges. Two of the first judges voted for him to stay in. The third one decided not to, which made it 2-1. And the one... that could have kept him in went for a public vote. So they then went for a public vote, and the transgender got the least of the votes. And that could be a reason why X Factor's under fire anyway, because of the viewing figures have plummeted this year. But he went out to my great amazement, and so now we have a kind of a situation where we've got a Saturday night we're watching a transgender in a skirt and high heels.
Well, they reward the people for doing this. They don't actually get there on the merit of the singing. It's like the black girl that won the baking competition the other day, and they actually admitted that the winner was picked to reflect the diversity that is multicultural Britain. So they actually admitted that. She won just because she was black. And you can say that if it's up to the judges, then they will give the award to the transsexual just because they're a transsexual, just to reflect the diversity that is Britain. But if it's given up to the public, then, of course, the public aren't going to vote for them.
No, but again, they're not going for my generation or your generation. They are going for that young generation, you know, the next one what's coming up. That's where they'll concentrate everything. And like when you got, I mean, I think the age of the parents, one was 23, one was 34, the father was 34, and the child was 2. So the child has no idea what's going on, but he's walking around the house in a pink dress, and the father's saying like that he loves it, so he allowed him to do it, which is kind of like, you know, one of the most brainless statements I've heard this year, if not in a while.
Well, it's usually the father is missing. And occasionally they pull out this black transsexual, transvestite thing on the BBC. But there's no father there, of course. It's got a white mother, but there's no father because the black father's obviously left. Just what they do. But, I mean, this has always been... I mean, we've always had... men that dressed in women's clothes, Widow Twankey and the pantomime dame, but they've always been objects of ridicule and mockery and just laughter, and it's been like a pantomime thing, and you know, at the end of it they've taken the clothes off and gone back to just being a normal man again, and it's just been a pantomime thing.
Hollywood changed that. I think Hollywood came out with this thing where, you know, they always have to have somebody in a dress at some stage for some masculinity, whether it were, you know, for various reasons, humiliation or one or two other reasons, just to prove they could get the actors to do the bidding. I don't know, but certainly Hollywood has been a big push of this, which the ADL have as well. The ADL are big pushes of the gay scene. So it does all boil down, it comes down to this Jewish mindset of homosexuality, which is why Tel Aviv, again, is, you know, the centre of homosexuality in the world. It's all to do with going back to Babylon.
Oh yeah, and you had the homosexuality then, and obviously the word Sodom comes from Sodom, which was destroyed, which was from that area, which is the same similar sort of time that grew into Babylon. So we've always had this problem with this, and in Europe, the European peoples, we've always been against it. We've always had laws against it. And you were saying just before we got on air that you had people saying that the Third Reich were persecuting homosexuals, but the Third Reich were only treating homosexuals the same way as everybody else was. You know, they knew that this was a deviant.
I don't call I don't call imprisoning somebody who's breaking the law persecution. I mean, you know, if somebody breaks the law and they're imprisoned, whatever country they're in. And so when somebody sends me a comment on, you know, on YouTube saying that, the homosexuals were persecuted, his figures were that there was 50,000 got imprisoned. But I'm saying to him, out of a population of 80 million, I don't find 50,000 that, you know, that big of a sum. In fact, they did a survey in the British Armed Forces. They reckoned in 1990, they did this survey, that they reckoned between 1939 and 45, there was 250,000 possible homosexuals or bisexuals. So his figures were quite low anyway. But the fact is, there's more than one reason a gay can get arrested for. If a gay shoplifts, he gets arrested. But I'm quite convinced in this guy's eyes, he was looking at it as the gay was being persecuted, which wasn't right at all. I can't think of a place in the world during the 1930s and the 1940s where there was a safe haven for homosexuals. I mean, Berlin was before Hitler came in, but the morals changed then in Germany, and unfortunately, around about 1994, I think it was, when Blair changed the rules on homosexuality over here, meant that there was a drop in morality in this country, in my opinion. So to say that the Nazis, it's a little bit like the eugenics thing, it's attached to the Nazis. We're in the situation of the eugenics. Churchill was one of the directors of the first eugenics meeting in London, and Americans were practicing eugenics before and after the war. But it's just because it's been labelled with the Nazis that, you know, it's kind of one of them words again. And the same way homosexuality, you know. He never mentioned anything about the 1,000-odd prisoners every year what were imprisoned in Britain.
Yeah, as I say, it's always been illegal everywhere. It was illegal in Britain. I'm trying to think of the famous playwright that was locked up for it, because it didn't matter, you know, whether you, how rich or well off you were, it was illegal.
Berlin, before Hitler came into power, many moved over to Berlin anyway because they called it a bugger's paradise.
Yeah, I mean, it was. I mean, you showed that, I think, in your Babylon episode, Greatest Story Never Told, and that's exactly what we have today. That's what it's called, you know, the New Babylon, and that's exactly what we have today is Babylon, where our morals are being dragged into the dirt, and it's getting lower and lower. The ages that these people, our youth, are experimenting with their sexuality. And what you're referring to with Tony Blair there, what he did, he lowered the age of consent even further than it originally was. And he also changed the law so that it could be promoted in schools. Because up until that point, they couldn't promote it basically. That's in right. Schools. So they couldn't teach it in schools. And this is what a lot of people don't realise it today. They think, oh, well, homosexuality has been legalised and what they do in their own homes is up to them. And they don't realise that they're actually telling the kids at schools that being homosexual is good. And if you tell a child something is good, then they're going to want to do it. They're going to want to know what it is. And what they say is, well, we have to tell them that it's good so that they don't think it's bad. But if you're telling, you know, if you're telling somebody, a child especially, that something is good, then...
Well, they're not only doing that, they're showing them how to have anal sex.
Well, this is, again, and this is the other thing. I mean, this must be quite horrific. I mean, if you're a child at an early age and you first learn about sex, it's pretty horrific anyway when you think about it. But to be told that...
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, just, you know, going through the normal phases of sex, as a youth is difficult, or can be, but to have that on top as well just confuses the whole situation completely, doesn't it? Let's be honest.
Yeah, it's just going to traumatise them. If you think that back in our history, the homosexuals, we used to throw them in the bog, you know, we used to throw them in the swamp. That's what these bodies we find in there, that's what they are, homosexuals that were thrown in there.
Yeah. Well, I mentioned, I think, a couple of weeks ago about ISIS throwing them off the highest roofs, you know, when they take over towns or cities, which is always a problem if Sharia law ever make its way to come into this country or into Europe. But I was listening to Yuri Bezmenov, who was KGB. He kind of absconded to America and gives some quite good talks about things, you know, how the Soviet Union, you know, subverted countries. And he mentions the fact that the religions, the nations what have lost their, you know, their trust in God or religion, like in Babylon and in the Mayans and a couple of other places he mentioned, all disintegrated. As soon as they lost that religion, it went. And it's what he was kind of saying, that once that goes, he knew people in Siberia who they wouldn't necessarily die for the truth, but he knew lords in Siberia who would die for God, something that couldn't be proven. And so he felt that it kind of kept society together, which I've always said that about Christianity in Europe, always kept that moral standard and that guideline for Europeans. And now when they're trying to break it all down now and kill it completely in Europe, you will have that situation, what he said about the Mayans and everywhere else in Babylon. These places do just disintegrate.
Well, faith itself is confidence, isn't it? It's having confidence in a promise. Yeah, I think people often mistake faith. They think, well, faith means believing in something that's not there. And, you know, that's rather Jewish interpretation of the word itself. Because when somebody has faith and faith in God, it means that they have confidence that the Creator will keep his word. You know, we'll keep his promise. Or faith in looking around you at how life is, in faith that you know, there is a Creator, for a start, just from looking at the life itself, you know.
Yeah, well, he noticed when you know, the people that died in the camps in Siberia, he said that those what believed in God died quite peacefully, whereas, you know, the ones that didn't, they seemed to be more scared of death than the actual ones who believed in God, which I can understand, you know.
And this is why the Jews attack Christianity. And,
exactly, it's a strength in a way, isn't it?
Yeah, well, and in a way, you know, they also attack Islam by trying to, you know, say that there are moderate Muslims and promote this moderate Muslim kind of thing.
Yeah, Syria.
But they do attack these other religions because they know that having a faith does give you strength. You know,
it certainly does with the Muslims, for sure. I mean, they are a tough nut to crack, because although Christianity, you know, I don't know many people who go to church myself, but I know a hell of a lot of Muslims who go to the mosque. So it does give them strength, and this is something that the Jews know.
Well, if people are prepared to die for their cause, they're prepared to die for their God. That's why we have this problem with the Muslims out in the Middle East. But if you think about it, what we've got there, we've got people with a lower IQ than us that are not as capable as us. But because they have this faith in God, they've managed to take over large swathes of the Middle East where they're working together in unison. Can you imagine what we could achieve if we were united in a faith? And we can't get united in the establishment church, obviously, because that's been corrupted, and a large part of that is down to the Jews, and that's a deliberate corruption.
Yeah, well, I can remember, I don't know if you can remember this, but if you can remember the Bailey bomber, he was in court at the time, and he took all the power away from that judge, because all through the court hearing, he wasn't the actual bomber. I believe he was driving the van and he got arrested. But all through that court hearing, he was abusing the judge, completely abusing him. And he was begging the judge to give him a death sentence. And when the guy came out, the judge came out and passed sentence on him, the guy lit up. The guy lit up like a light bulb. I've never seen anybody as happy. And now, that took all that power away from that judge. And it was something that clocked, and the guy actually said, Bailey Bomber turned around and said, like, you know, I'll go, but there'll be another 1,000 behind me. And the judge looked devastated. He really did.
Which what are you referring to there? The Bailey bomber? I don't think I've heard of that.
Yeah, was it Marley? It was in Marley where that huge massive bomb went off.
The Bali bomber.
Barley. Yeah, that's right. I have the pronunciation wrong. Yeah, he just lit up like a torch.
Well, that's it. You know, if somebody hasn't got a fear of death, then what is it that anyone else can hold over them? If they don't have a fear of death, if they're fearless of death because they have confidence in the afterlife, they have confidence in their God, then they're going to be unstoppable, really, aren't they?
Exactly, they'll go through brick walls, and this is the strength that Christians used to have once over, I believe, but today it's been eroded away by several means, you know, television and infiltration of churches and communism. Raising its head and cultural marches, but all this erodes Christianity and that strength that they once had. But certainly the Muslims, you pray five times a day, they go to mosques, even the young ones go. So it is a problem for somebody like the Jews who want to break that hold, if you like.
We've also got that unwanted link with Judaism as well. I mean, this brings me to another point that I wanted to cover. And I was listening to you the other day on the Graham Hart show, and he asked you about the Torah, and you said that the Jews can twist any book to make it seem however they want. But the Torah itself is a really deceptive word, because a lot of Christians think when the Jew says the Torah that he means the Old Testament.
But can I just say this? This came from that piece that I put in the documentary about the rabbi who was reading Jewish supremacy from the Torah. Now, it didn't really matter to me what book he was reading from. He was preaching to his pupils what the Jews thought of the Goyim, which was two drops of water in a bucket. And so once I put that up, people did come on and say, but the Torah is not a supremacy thing. But that wasn't it. To me, it wasn't about that. It was the fact that these Jews in this classroom were being taught by this rabbi. So this is how this all came about. So I'm glad that you're going to bring this subject up now, just to clarify this for people.
Yeah, I mean, what that rabbi was saying, I mean, he was twisting the words of the Bible to make it seem as if it was promoting Jews above all else. And we went into it a couple of episodes back. If you actually look at that verse, it's talking about something completely different. I mean, you read the verse before it and the verse after, and he's just pulled that verse and then twisted it. But when he's talking about the Torah, when the Jews are actually talking about the Torah, what they include in that is the Torah Shebich Tav, which is just the first five books of the Old Testament, and then the Torah Shebi'ul Peh, which is the Oral Talmud. So when they're talking about the Torah, what they're talking about is the Talmud, basically. But Christians, which most Christians, problem. Yeah, and most, which is their book, the Talmud. That's the book which encourages pedophilia, teaches them how to take over the world, tells them how to enslave the Goyim, yep. How to lie. It's anti-Christian, and it's basically breaking all the laws that are in the Old Testament and telling them how to break the laws and how to take over, how to infiltrate places, where they can go to commit crimes, how it's perfectly fine to commit these crimes to the Gentiles. And basically the Old Testament says, if you believe in God, you know, at the end of it, and you obey God's laws, then you'll be rewarded. But what the Talmud says is, no, you don't want to do that. You want to take over the world and enslave everybody. Don't listen to that. Don't obey God. Take over the world and enslave everyone. Which is basically what the Jews have tried to do. And what they actually say with this Talmud, you know, this is really laughable, this is. But they claim that the Talmud was actually given to Moses and it's more important than the first five books of the Old Testament, which was supposedly written by Moses, but it wasn't written down for 2,000 years. Mm. So you got Moses in roughly around about 1500 BC, and then you've got the Talmud basically being written between 200 and 600 AD, after Christ. The Talmud was written after Christ, and the Judaism as a religion was formed out of a to retaliate against Christianity. They'd been rejected by the people in Christianity. They'd killed Jesus, and they formed this other religion based around this rejection of Christianity, basically. And the Talmud was what they wrote down, and that's what Jesus was condemning as the commandments of men. So when they say we're studying the Torah, what they mean is we're studying the Talmud. But gullible Christians think that when they say we're studying the Torah, it means that these Jews are studying. They think it means the Jews are studying the Christian Old Testament, and they think that they're somehow that they're positive towards Christians, and they're not. And this is why you get these Christian Zionists, because they think that the Jews follow the Old Testament, and they don't. They don't even study it. They just pull out a piece from it every day and hold it up in public. Every few days they will read a verse in public, see, just for the public to see, to make it look like there's something to do with the Old Testament, like they follow it. And then in reality, that scroll, that Old Testament scroll, just the five books, then goes back up on the wall in the synagogue and is never taken down again for anything else. And in their schools, their yeshivas, all they study is the Talmud, this oral law, which is basically just rabbis talking.
Well, according to a rabbi in marching to Zion, not many rabbis have read it all anyway. It's actually, the volumes were that long and that many that, only real learned scholars have actually read the complete versions of it all. This rabbi certainly hadn't, and he didn't know any rabbis that had. So, and he's saying it's like a bit of a Wikipedia thing. It's not just one person what's written it. It's come from all sources over these thousands of years. So this huge, massive information in all these volumes are very rarely read completely. But what is in it is enough to know that it's a problem to Christianity, which is why I believe the Roman Catholic Church had a purge at one point when they found out about the Talmud and its teachings.
Yeah, once they found out what was in it, and they found out what was in it by these converso Jews that had quote-unquote converted to Christianity, and then they exposed what was in the Talmud so that the Pope knew what was in the Talmud. But that wasn't until, I think, about 1200 AD.
It was further on,
it was quite some time after it. And there are volumes and volumes and volumes of it. What they say is that the rabbi's word is more important than God's word, and that God obeys the rabbi. And that the Jewish race, Jewish race, is more important than God, and that is their God. Basically, is the Jewish race. That's why you get so many atheists among them, because they don't believe in God. I was just going to say
their God isn't my God.
Yeah, it's you know, this, and they are a race. They're not a religion. And this, I mean, it's wrong to really call it a religion, because it's more like a guide to. Like a criminal gang, basically, like a mafia-style gang, how to take places over.
Of course they were, yeah.
How to, take a vow or a prayer to absolve you from having to tell the truth for the next year. If you're going to commit crimes, go to somewhere where you're not known, and then go and commit the crimes. Go to a Gentile's place, not a Jew's place. Go to a Gentile's place, far away from where you are. Take a different name, wear a hood, and then commit as many crimes as you like.
Which is exactly what they're doing. But I'd like to know where I stand on this list, because the guy, the actual rabbi, said he was talking now the best of the Gentiles, the most righteous of the Gentiles. Were two drops of water in the bottom of that bucket. So where I and me and you stand, I don't know.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, what he's doing there is he's trying to say that the Old Testament confirms this nonsense that the Jews are above everybody else. But that actual bit there, that the most righteous of the Gentiles should be killed, I think is what the quote actually is. And that is from the Talmud. Mm. So what he's doing is he's applying the Talmud to the Old Testament, which is how they negate everything that's in the Old Testament. I mean, you try and get up the Ten Commandments and put the Ten Commandments somewhere, the Jews will straight away be screaming that that shouldn't be up there, that that's homophobic, that it's against single mums, it's against people from being divorced, it shouldn't be up there, and it's persecuting people. That's what the Jews would say if you tried to put the Ten Commandments somewhere. And yet you've got people that think that the Jews follow this Mosaic law. They don't follow the Mosaic law. The Mosaic law is that homosexuals should be put to death. Mm-hmm. That's the Mosaic law, not, you know, make a city up, your capital city, and make it the centre of sodomy, which is what they've done with Tel Aviv.
Exactly what they've done, yeah. They
tried to advertise it as that. And you've got synagogues that conduct gay marriages, and you've got these reform progressive rabbis that are really proud of the influence they've had on promoting homosexuality everywhere, basically.
Again, I touch on that in this part as well, because it all comes into this genocide thing, whereas we're in America, the Jews have notably been at the forefront of gay marriage, and as the part I'll explain, it's not even anti-Semite to even say that, because Joe Biden has said it and praised the Jews for being at the forefront of pushing gay marriage, and like he should know because he's the Vice President of the United States.
Oh yeah, you know, when they say we're responsible for promoting the gay agenda, it's fine, and everyone claps, and oh, aren't they great? You know, they've helped us progress. But when either me or you, Dennis, say, well, they're the ones behind the gay agenda, then we're anti-Semitic, even though it's the same information. So anti-Semitism is just a way to shut down the opponents. Again, and this, all the instructions for doing this, all the instructions for carrying this out are in the Talmud. And you can also see in the Talmud where it's so big and you've got so much minutiae in it, and all these different statutes and how much they've got to pay to the rabbi if they break this law, and how they can get away with breaking that law. And you can see a reflection of that in the mess that is our legal systems now. Instead of having a simple law, like we had our common law, which is basically the same as the original Mosaic law, it's a simple law, easy enough to remember and understand, no murder, no stealing, no taking another man's wife. Instead of having that, we've now got all these complicated statutes that the governments make, all these fines for driving too fast or parking in the wrong area, dropping litter, all these different swearing in a public place. You've got all these different fines that they now give you, and that is exactly the same as the Talmud.
I think it's £80 a piece if two people are found fighting on a Saturday night. And once over, you might have had somebody innocent in that particular fight, you know, somebody's been picked on, but there's no difference now. You're just taken to police station and they find £80 a piece.
Well, that goes back to the Talmud. The Talmud is full of all these little bits of compensation that you've got to pay to the rabbi if you commit these crimes. So they're basically saying, well, you can do this, but you'll have to pay to do it. You know, you can break this law, but you have to pay the rabbi to do it. And that mentality has now got through into our legal system, and we've got this labyrinthine legal system where people don't know anymore whether they're breaking the law or not. The government is passing thousands and thousands of new laws and pieces of legislation all the time. And that's the same as the Talmud. You've got thousands and thousands of pieces of legislation governing every aspect of everything. And of course, we've even got them. I mean, the Chief Justice of Britain, I think, has been a Jew the last three times.
Yeah.
Heavily infiltrated into our judicial system, which means, again, that the Jews are going to get preferential treatment. It's like when Simon Shepherd from Heretical Press, when he published the Tales of the Holohoax comic, someone daft, basically, posted a copy of the comic under a synagogue door. And the rabbi from that synagogue just phoned up the Chief Justice, as you do, who happened to be a Jew, straight away, and got Simon busted for it. And he got years in prison. He went to America to try and seek asylum over there. So he spent years in prison because this Jew, this rabbi, was able to just phone up the chief justice and get him to take take control of the case. So
it's amazing how this 2% get power in a country. They're adapted it, which of course is why they've been kicked out of so many countries in the past. And exactly what's happened in America and Britain now happened in Germany pre 1933. So, you know, things are coming home to roost now. People what went to war in World War II, you know, thought they were doing right, are finding that their sons and daughters now were facing exactly what the Germans were facing.
Well, yeah, what was confined to just Germany at the time, after the First World War, is now engulfing Europe and America. And the most bizarre thing is that the countries that were under communism were actually shielded from it. So they're the ones that are resisting it now.
That is the bizarre thing. Who would have thought that Putin would give speeches about morality and Christianity and places like Poland, you just mentioned before we came on air, have now gone into a position where they want to come out of the European Union now. Have they got a new government, did you say?
Yeah, the Law and Justice Party in Poland, that the Jewish media are calling them right-wing, and there was 50,000 nationalists turned out to demonstrate at a rally the other day on their National Independence Day. There were thousands more people than that because it was the National Independence Day, but apparently the actual nationalist side of the demonstration, there was 50,000 people. And they're saying, we don't want the Muslims in here. We want them out. I mean, that's a huge demonstration. 50,000 people.
Yeah, for sure. And fair play to them because, you know, I mean, they joined the EU, obviously, when they broke away from the Soviet Union, as did other countries on the Eastern Bloc. And even Hungary, like, we're particularly happy about having the borders open to all them migrants from Africa. So it's fair play to them. They got criticised, but I think they stuck to their guns, as far as I know.
Well, truth is stranger than fiction, isn't it? Because you really couldn't have worked out that's how things were going to end up.
It's the logos, isn't it, really, when you think about it? Whatever happens won't change the plan of what God has for the universe.
Well, it's order. It's as if people want to stick with order or whether they're going to fall to chaos, isn't it? I mean, that's what logos is the order of the universe, and Christ was the logos personified. So if you lose your faith in Christ, you lose your alignment with the order of the universe, and you fall to the chaos. And those Eastern European countries, where they were persecuted by communism, and communism basically stamped down hard on Christianity, because of that, because it stamped down so hard on it, now that communism has been lifted, it's rebounded, and the people are more Christian. Whereas rather than doing that in the West, rather than stamping down on Christianity, what they've done is completely corrupt it and pervert it and warp it and make it so that we're actually welcoming our own invasion. And the people say,
it's very crafty, isn't it? It's very crafty.
Well, people, we get criticism from people that are saying, well, you know, we're giving into this invasion and all it is just an extension of the liberal values from Christianity. But we've never given into an invasion before. It's only been in the last 70 years that we've given into this invasion. And we've had Christianity, I mean, in Britain, we've had it for almost 2,000 years. I mean, the place that's had it the least, Estonia, they've had it for 1,000 years. And we never gave into an invasion before, up until this point. We always fought against it. And we always saw them as outsiders. We never saw them as, the Muslim invader is our neighbour and our friend. We saw them as the enemy of God. And the enemy of God was to be put down like an animal, you know, and that's the very terminology that they used. They called them Muslims animals.
Brutal
though
it was, is that stops subversion, because you can't be subverted if you don't want to be. You know what I mean? Like, because you know you close your borders, like, and keep a tight media, like the Soviet Union used to do, and their population would never know what went on outside in the West. And we should do the same thing, you know, with our morals, and keep out these kind of effects on us, such as migrants and how they teach our kids about anal sex, etc. that comes from within, and that's somehow gone into our philosophy. I don't think Blair helped the cause. I think he probably killed Christianity in 5 years, where we've had it, like you said, for 2,000.
I think if you want to have a successful nation state, it has to be made up of the same people. It has to speak the same language, and it has to have the same religion. And then you're going to have a successful state. And I think that's been proved throughout the last 2,000 years. I mean, once the various tribes had the same religion, these European tribes, they formed the nations, and we had these separate nations, and we had a continent that was united. The church united them, but they were separate nations speaking the same language. You had people speaking different languages.
Well, some of them,
you had ethnic strife.
Exactly. But that takes us to the fact about Israel again. I don't think many people realise this week that there's been some more dangerous steps down in Syria this week with bombing of Syrian troops by Israel, which has got Putin quite annoyed, because he did warn them off, and the planes at one point had a standoff over the border, Syrian border at one point. So it's troubling times down there. He's also fallen out with Turkey. He's warned Turkey, because apparently for a number of years now they've been sending in anti-air rockets and mortars and heavy machine guns to ISIS, and he's had enough of that one as well. He's also a bit peeved at the fact that it looks like there was a bomb now on the plane what blew up, killing over 200 Russians. So he's annoyed at Egypt at this moment in time as well, and he's probably considering bombing tourists in Egypt, which is going to not help the situation down there. It is troubling times, because Israel had been warned and they obviously didn't take much notice.
Well, that's it. I mean, the Jews think that they're above everybody else, and nothing ever gets... they never get any comeuppance. It's always, oh, well, Israel's got a right to defend itself.
And they never get supported.
Whatever attacks the Jews do, it's always replied with, oh, well, Israel's got a right to defend itself. And that attack on the plane, blowing up the plane, I mean, that's Muslims that have blown up the plane. It's Muslims that blew up the train station. Muslims that are setting these bombs off everywhere and killing people and massacring people. And it's Muslims that we're inviting into our country and allowing them into our country. And whereas if we were to go back to our original laws and our original morals, none of this would be happening. We should have a line drawn in the sand. These are eternal laws, really, and morals that conform with the natural order, which say that one ethnicity sticks with its own, speaks its own language, has its own religion, and anyone that's not a part of that has to be pushed out and kept out. Anyone that goes against the natural order, homosexuality, they have to be pushed out. You can't have them in there, because it's just going to break things down. You can't have Muslims in there, because it's going to break things down.
That's very similar to what Putin was saying about minorities not being allowed to dictate in Russia. He won't allow it, because obviously his culture and his nation comes first in its own country. So it's not rocket science. And any minorities want to alter things do get slapped down on, and rightly so. Pussy riot to Muslims. You know, it just won't happen. You know, they've got their own culture, and he wants to defend it, apparently, and rightly so.
I hope he does defend it. I know that you get some negative things said about him because he built that cathedral, but he didn't actually build that cathedral. He rebuilt the mosque, and he called it the Cathedral Mosque to make this point that Russia is a Christian country. That's why he called it the Cathedral Mosque, because he's not going to allow the Muslims to take over. This is what these minorities do, and you can't blame them for it, because they will agitate to have special benefits and special privileges.
You're tuned in to Radio Stormer on the DailyStormer.com.
Where were we?
We were just talking about Putin. I was saying about this bomb that went off, that these Muslims have blown up in Egypt, the Russian people. And all these attacks are by Muslims, and yet we're still being told that Muslims are our friends and we need to encourage more of them into our countries. But you don't hear Putin saying, well, I'd like to see a Muslim president in my lifetime, which is what you get Cameron saying, that he'd like to see a Muslim prime minister in his lifetime.
Well, Putin's not everybody's cup of tea, and I can understand, you know, some people thinking like that. But to be honest, this day and age, today, there's no other country which is Christian and white and has an army which can worry the New World Order. So it really just comes down to the fact that there's nobody else. I believe what he says is true about his morals and his feelings for Christianity and his breakaway from what was the New World Order, he said was now over. So, but we don't have any alternative, because what is the alternative? There is none.
Well, if you look at the other armies, like the American army, they're trying to replace the white men with women and replace them with blacks. And in the British army, they're trying to encourage more so-called diversity. And this is a real problem. I mean, if you've got Muslims in the army and the army have been sent against a Muslim country, then these Muslims, you know, they're not going to be wanting to fight for Britain. They're going to be wanting to sabotage Britain's war effort, aren't they?
Again, it's in this part of the documentary, what I've just done this week, I do touch on that one, and a Muslim is asked the question, do you consider yourself British? And the guy turns around and says, I consider myself as Muslim. This is just an island I was born in, and I don't class myself as a horse if I'm born in a stable. And that's exactly the mentality that these people, they don't have no allegiance at all to this country. Ah, the ringing stopped, which you won't know, but it affects me.
That's all right. It's sounding okay. I mean, we can just hear it slightly here, but it's not too loud.
And it's gone there, yeah. This is all to do, as I said, with this genocide. I had to pack it into 15 minutes. Which didn't help me cause when I got this other video this week. So I apologise, people are still waiting for that, but it will be coming out shortly.
Yeah, it'll eventually get there. But it's not just replacing our people with Muslims in the army. As I say, it's replacing the men with women as well, and encouraging homosexuality and transsexuals to join the army. Yeah. You also think they get the special privileges. Transsexuals just been put in prison in Britain, and they're arguing for special privileges for them, to put them in a women's prison rather than in a men's prison,
I think it's more advanced in America. There's even a transgender toilet in the White House, so restroom, as they say over there. You know, it's
well in America. Again, they'll even give you the operation if you're in prison. Yeah, go to prison in America, and then you can demand to have a sex change. Yeah, isn't that what's happened to the WikiLeaks whistleblower? Whatever name he calls himself. Yeah,
Bradley Manning.
There you go. You've got another example. You've got someone who's messed up in the head, homosexual, unsure of what gender he is, and he goes and gives away all the secrets of the country. And whether you think, well, that's a good thing or a bad thing, you know, he released these WikiLeaks things, he was being trusted to do what he could for that country. And again, here's another problem. He's actually Welsh. He's not American. So his allegiance isn't to America in the first place, is it? So he's working for the American army, and he gives all the secrets away.
Well, it's strange, because Anthony Blunt was a similar situation when they give away the secrets to the Russians over here. Back in the 60s, there's a homosexual gang then of spies.
And wasn't he Jewish as well?
Well, he was related to the royal family, so it could quite well be.
So all the time you've got people that are from these minorities, and their loyalties are not going to be to the majority.
They lie somewhere else, exactly.
And they're also going to be easily paid off, especially if you're a homosexual, then they're easily going to be paid off because they don't have the strength of character that other people have.
Well, in them days, blackmail would have played a big part in it as well, wouldn't they? Because, you know, they would have been... But it's the same with paedophiles as well. Like, you know, some of these politicians will do as they're told because they've got this over them.
Well, it's always been a way that they've been able to control people. And mm-hmm. once you get that homosexual clique in there, then you're going to get more and more homosexuals in there. I was talking about this the other day. It's like the Freemasons, all of the funny handshakes and all look out for one another. The homosexuals are the same. They're going to encourage more homosexuals to join, and they're going to give special privileges to other homosexuals. And that's what they're going to agitate for. And you can even extend it to women, feminists. Feminists, and now they say, well, you have to be a feminist to actually get to any position of power in the government. But they're not actually going to do anything for the people as a whole. They're certainly not going to do anything for men. All they are trying to do is to achieve privileges for women. And they will stand together and say that that's what they do and that they're women first.
Yeah, well, it says
politicians afterwards. Yeah. Whereas a man, he's doing his politician's job to do what's best for man, women, children, even extending it to these other races now. But women politicians, they're there to advance the feminist cause. And that's what the media will ask them. What did they do for the cause of feminism while they were there? How did they increase benefits for women while they're in that political position? And these are all the questions that they'll get asked, this is what women will judge them on, is how many privileges did they give to women above men? Whereas male politicians aren't asked, well, what did you do for men then?
Because the thing is that's a Jewish movement as well. Because I want to touch on it briefly, but I do include that again in this episode. Whereas the feminist movement in America was Jewish led, and Betty Friedan wrote one of the iconic books on feminism. So all these minorities, when you do enough digging, you'll find out that the Jews are behind them all.
Oh yeah, because when they realised that class war wasn't going to work and they weren't going to be able to set one class against the other, they thought, well, we've got to find some group to set against the rest. So they created these minority groups and thought, well, we'll use them and we'll promote their cause and we'll get people to feel sorry for them and we'll get
them to
have privileges. And this is the way they work, because they've got to have their chaos somehow. They've got to have the people fighting against one another somehow, which is the opposite of National Socialism, which was class cooperation. You know, we need each separate class. You know, you can't just screw the worker class into the ground, because you need the worker class. And the worker class can't just screw everything they can get out of the managerial class, because the worker class need the managerial class to do the job that the managerial class does.
It just seems to me that it's never settled. I can't remember a time when this country's actually been settled to a prolonged time of no upsets. You know, there's always some one week it'll be someone else. You know what I mean? Like, it's always in turmoil. It seems a long time since we've had that period of just contentment. A long time.
I believe there was a time back then in Alfred the Great's time.
I'm sure there was.
For a few years. No, it was probably pretty good between 1290 and about 1600 when they got rid of the Jews. And you had Edward I, who encouraged nationalism, got rid of the Jews. So I think that must have been a pretty good time. But then since Cromwell's Revolution, since then is when we've had the problems. Cromwell's Revolution and the Bank of England. Jews again.
This thing, why must we change just for the sake of changing? You know, if everyone's content and with the way things are, just let it ride. But no, it's always something what causes turmoil. You know, whether it's bringing in female priests or female vicars, bishops, or it's gay pride ranting past, you know, on the streets outside. It's just never settled. I'm sure it's purposely done.
If you've got to have change, then that means that the people that are in there at the moment haven't got things right, have they?
Yeah, exactly.
If it needs changing, it means the people in there haven't got things right.
Oh, so, they haven't gone to like they want.
Why do we have to keep having this change? Why do we keep having to have new people put into these positions of power? People that have no experience of what they're actually doing and the jobs that they've been given. You know, they give people a job working with the economy that have only ever taught English before. You know, crazy things like that. That's the way that democracy works.
Yeah, it does. Yeah,
you know, this is why fascism is the best way. It's all the people working together for the one cause, and the people that are best at what they're doing get given all the materials they need to make themselves even better. But we're coming up to the end here now, Dennis. Just end on a positive note. Remind people, 50,000 people, 50,000 nationalists demonstrating in Poland and right-wing party in power. And I just, if you just want to remind people where they can find your work quickly, Dennis.
Yeah, Great Story NeverTold.tv for the Adolf Hitler documentary. Communism by the Backdoor.tv for the new documentary that's still ongoing. And YouTube, Dennis Wise.
Okay, well, thank you very much for listening. Tune in again next week for some more, where we'll be on a new radio station. More about that tomorrow.
Bye.